Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Michelle Chaloon. It's an interview I recorded in August of 2012. Michelle grew up in an upper-class family in Mongolia, a country firmly wedged between two superpowers, Russia to the north and China to the south. Her father won Mongolia's math Olympiad as a young man and studied theoretical physics at Moscow University. In 1991, while the Soviet Union was collapsing, travel restrictions in Mongolia were relaxing, and Michelle's father was finally allowed to accept a long-standing invitation from Colorado State University to come study and work in Fort Collins. He was reluctant to leave the family at first, but Michelle's mother urged him to seize the opportunity. I began by asking Michelle if she still felt strong ties to Mongolia.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's still my duty to help Mongolia develop properly. And for a long time, when people, and people do ask these questions, when people asked me, like, okay, so if Mongolia and the United States went to war, which one would you fight for?
People actually ask you those questions. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I'm still young. Those, but yeah, I think it's just joking questions from my peers, you know, sitting around and just,
well, saying, it's probably part of one of those questions that immigrants get asked: Are you with us or are you against us? Are you American or are you this other?
That's exactly what I mean. So as much as I want to help Mongolia develop properly and see what I can do to contribute, I would have to say that the United States has become my home, and it's important to me that I acknowledge and be grateful for all of the things I've received by coming to the United States. It's strange. For a long time, actually, I was not so happy with being in the United States. And in fact, initially coming to the United States was a reluctant decision for me because it wasn't my decision for one and for another because I had heard so many negative things about the United States, and the 80s movies from the United States didn't help either because I was in Mongolia watching these terrifyingly...
Violent
movies. Huh.
Like what movies thought, did you see that sort of typified America?
Oh, I don't remember exactly like what movies. I was a kid, but a lot of the movies were kind of like inner city guns, and I just didn't think. After I came to Colorado, I remember coming off the airport in Denver and then driving through. It was light rain and I just remember feeling like, oh my gosh, this is just like Mongolia. It's beautiful. And there's lots of mountains and, you know, and wide open spaces.
So you were ready for guns and concrete and...
Yeah, I was ready for high rises and I didn't see any. but yeah.
So how old were you when you came? Tell the story of the circumstances surrounding your coming to the United States.
Well, I was 11. My dad had been in the United States already for a year, actually. But during this year, Mongolia not only changed politically, but all of the economic infrastructure fell in the capital because Mongolia was like 89% dependent on imports from Russia, especially in the capital. Mongolia wasn't self-sustaining at all, even though there were plenty of food and meat just on feet. On their hoofs in the countryside. In the city, we weren't getting any of it. And so I remember that summer as being really rough. For example, we'd go for days without any food. All of the stores were empty. My brothers and I, we used to stand in lines because we had these ration coupons per family, per number of head, you know, and my mom was really disturbed that, you know, us kids with voracious appetites, we only got like a fraction of abortion of an adult ration, so that my mom and three kids aged 7, 11, and 12, we weren't getting enough food. And so, but yeah, my brother stood in the most difficult line, which is the meat line, where everybody was pushing and mean. And I was in the milk line, which is actually relatively less violent, but I did notice an 8-year-old child die in that line. We would stand like 3 hours in queue every morning to get our ration. And so, as you can imagine, people got pretty disgruntled. You know, their whole daily life was getting food. And with the amount of inflation that was going on, all savings were rendered worthless. My brother, for example, had a saving account of 1,000 tugruk, which, you know, was probably about, let's say, worth $1,000, just to give you an idea. And by the end of the summer, it was worth like $10 worth. It was that crazy time. And so people's incomes weren't matching up. That's why these ration stubs were given. And with these ration stubs, there wasn't enough food being brought into the city. So what they would do is they would make the rations even smaller for the people later in the line, hence the violence. People are trying to cut lines. People are worried. And especially for my mom, you know, just being alone with three little kids, it was hard for her to be in multiple places at the same time. So she would send us to go out and get the food, to get earliest in line as possible. And me in the milk line, I remember, for example, you know, they were watering down the milk. There was a huge jug. They would put another huge jug of water into the thing.
Could you watch them do that?
Yeah, through the fence. I could like see through the cracks. That's what they were doing. And people still needed the milk, watered down or no. So we would still go for it.
So you said you watched an 8-year-old child die. Was the child trampled?
Well, yeah, she was trampled. And I saw her. I saw her cries. Everybody was just all over. And I just didn't know that she really died until I saw in the newspaper the next day and realized, oh, that's where I was, and that's that girl I saw. And I don't know, it's disturbing.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My guest, Michelle Chalun, is describing the hardships her family suffered when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991 and brought the economy of Mongolia down with it. So you said that there was food on the hoof, there were animals out in the countryside, and so it was a distribution problem.
It was.
Was that just like the government falling apart?
It's just like, you know, the developed countries in Africa right now. There's plenty of food for all the people in the world, but it's a distribution issue. And same with Mongolia. There were enough food in the countryside. We just couldn't bring them to the city because there was no infrastructure for it. There was no logistical planning, and everything just fell apart at once, and people just didn't know what to do. And so everybody rushed the stores. They were out, and after they were out, nobody knew how to get new food in.
The cause of that was what was the cause again?
Well,
is that the fall of Russia?
Yeah.
The Soviet Union?
Basically, all imports from Russia stopped.
With the fall of the Soviet, with the collapse of the Soviet Union?
Yeah, with the fall of the Soviet Union.
Your country was very dependent on...
Very much so.
So your father had left a year before in an effort to try to go
find... Well, yeah. What happened was when the government overturned in 1991... My dad's denial on my dad's permission to leave the country went away. So the scientists came back from CSU and said, hey, would you like to come to the United States and work with us now that you can? And so he said, sure. So he was allowed to leave, but without the family. That was his visa. And then his project got bigger, and he brought us over a year later. And I still remember receiving letters from my dad, just very apologetic and upset over what we were going through, when he could go to the grocery store and get all these goodies, you know. And
I mean, was it something that he had to do to leave and find a better place so that he could move you?
I think at the time he didn't have a crystal ball into the future. He was only just taking an opportunity that he saw. And he asked, you know, my mom consulted with others to see whether that was good move to come to the United States. It meant a switch of career for him. He switched from theoretical physics / mechanical engineering to ecology. So he had to come here and take classes, and he wasn't paid very much by U.S. standards. I think he only received like $1,000 a month, but he was still putting away most of it in order to try to save, and he was still sending us about $200 a month. And at that time in Mongolia, that meant a lot of money, although we couldn't buy anything because there was nothing in the city to buy. Yeah.
So you were money rich and food poor. You still couldn't.
Exactly. So instead we like bought a VCR and a TV.
Because those were readily available, but food was scarce.
Food wasn't, but you know, with plenty of money you could buy.
How long did that go on? How long was that shortage?
You know, I think the worst of it was through that summer. And then at the end of the summer of 1992, we came to the United States. So yeah, at the end of that summer, when we see old pictures of my family, you'll see my little brother looking the most sorry. He really looked super thin, and we called him Popsicle because all we could see was a stick and a head.
So even with that the trouble standing in line for food and scarcity, you were reluctant to leave your home. Can you talk about those feelings, the pluses and minuses of immigration, what you have to leave?
It was really just conversations with my older brother. My older brother was like, oh, it's violent there, it's not good. And me having been schooled that United States is extremely materialistic, people don't care, it's cold, you know, like people are cold, impersonal. I don't know. I just was afraid.
Was that all from the movies? Is that
all from the movies. It was propaganda, you know. The Mongolian classrooms, you'll see almost kind of bare tables and board, and always have picture of, you know, Lenin up above on top of the blackboard. And, you know, you can kind of take that symbolism to the extreme. That's how it was, you know. Communism was touted as a good thing. I still remember my story when I was learning to read in Mongolia, about my thing versus our thing, how saying that it's ours and having community mentality is far superior than having selfish desires and egotistical drive and ambition. And so yeah, a lot of that was like this whole mentality too, you know. And so to me, this land of opportunity and gaining for the self was a negative thing, that I was afraid that everybody was out for themselves. And it's ironic because now I see that United States has the most altruistic people in the world, you know, and Mongolia is now out. You know, everybody there is like out for themselves and corrupt. And I'm not saying everybody's corrupt, but
no, but the atmosphere that's created,
it's completely broken down the social fabric of what's right and what's wrong. To bring in capitalism at the rate that Mongolia did, after having that communist mentality, I think it kind of swung the opposite way to the extreme.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Michelle Chaloun was 10 and living in Mongolia when her country conducted a peaceful democratic revolution and transitioned to a market economy. That was 1990. A year later, the Soviet Union collapsed, and Mongolia's economy crashed along with it, causing a desperate food crisis. So, tell me about your mother.
My mom is an artist, and, you know, in Mongolia, when you say you're an artist, it's not like a hobby. She actually went through a special art school from the time she was 12 and trained in all different forms until she got her master's, and she was teaching at a college there, fine art. And then she came here and, you know, didn't do any of that anymore. I don't know. It was for her a very isolating experience, from my observation, because she didn't know how to speak English and she didn't have any friends in the United States.
So the immigrating to the United States was very isolating for your mother.
Right, right. And her role and importance as a mother diminished too, because we learned English and we started doing our own homeworks and doing our own thing. And my mom was kind of left behind. And she grew depressed. And for her, it was very dark times, you know. And she doesn't associate Fort Collins with all the good things that I do.
How is she now? Has she adjusted, or is it still really hard for her?
Well, you know, it's still difficult. Life is not what she expected, and she's moved to Chicago, and she's now a caregiver. And, you know, from her youth, I'm sure with her talent being well recognized and being having won an internship to go to France and do her own displays, and from being a teacher, it's a long way to fall, I think, to come here and not know anybody and to feel like her life is wasted. A lot of this is conjecture. I speak with her as a daughter, and so because of that, we have our own relationship here. But when I think about her life and try to put it in perspective, like try to see it through her eyes, yeah, I think it's
so. She's in Chicago now as a caregiver, helping others, using her mother skills.
Yeah, yeah, she's nurturing others.
Was this move to the United States, did it disrupt, it sounded like in a way it disrupted your family as a young woman watching your mother, you know, become more and more depressed? And, you know, did it contribute to the dissolution of your parents' marriage, this move?
I think so. I think my extended family was a huge reason they stuck together. I'm not saying this family dynamic is common among all immigrant families, because I think my parents, they already had their difficulties in Mongolia, too.
But nothing like an immigration to take a fragile relationship apart.
Yeah, and if it was a strong relationship, I think they would have relied on each other more and really got stronger. And, you know, at least I think so.
So as a young kid, you're trying to figure out what this place is and how it runs, and you're watching your parents kind of move apart. That must have been a hard time for you.
Yeah, you know, teen angst.
Yeah.
And what's life and what am I supposed to do in it? And all these big questions were there. And then seeing my parents just, you know, falling apart, and my mom wasn't one to go down quietly, you know. As depressed as she was, she would still put up a fight against my dad. And so they had these fights, and my mom and I had our fights too. And they were all just, I feel like, externalizations of our fears, you know. My mom was probably afraid she was worthless. And I was afraid that I would be just like my mom. You know, eventually she was so irrational and crazy and depressed, you know, and just she let her life loose. You know, she didn't have the discipline to make it work. And I was so mad at her for it. And I was so afraid inside that if things didn't work in my life, if I didn't do enough, that I wouldn't be enough, you know. And so I crammed my life with things to do. I was part of the IB. I was part of the student council. I did all these sports. I was out working part-time on top of it, trying to win scholarships because I know my family couldn't afford it. And, you know, just craziness. I was just always gone. And
that was part of the defense, right?
Sure.
Always gone and moving on.
Definitely. And my dad, of course, would just work, and he has his own way of dealing with things too, you know, and
he was really trying to hang in there.
Yeah, he was really trying to hang in there until we were old enough. That was his mentality the whole time, like, I'm just going to do it for the kids until they get old enough. And sure enough, as soon as my younger brother turned 18, they divorced. And so I think it was the toughest on my little brother.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Michelle Chaloon is describing the stress her family experienced fleeing a desperate food shortage in Mongolia and trying to adjust to life in the United States. So was your family typical? Were you middle class in Mongolia?
No, I'd say my family was probably more along the lines of the better connected.
Because your mother was an artist, your father was well-educated, a professional person.
My grandfather was high up in the army. He was one of the people who founded Ulaanbaatar.
What is that?
Ulaanbaatar is a fairly new city.
So your grandfather was one of the founders.
Right. So at this time, my grandfather moved to, went along with the military to Ulaanbaatar and helped make it the city it is now. It was just a small settlement initially when he came, and they had this burgeoning, you know, beginnings of a city, and through the winter they needed food. So my grandfather logistically coordinated the bringing of meat and supplies and building an underground refrigeration system and feeding the people and so forth. And he was high up in the military. He was advisor to the president and gave, wrote a lot and, you know, was quoted by people. He was a well-respected and well-known person. In my other grandfather was actually same. He was a number one literary critic and figure in Mongolia, extremely well-studied. And his written language was prolific in German, English, Russian, and Mongolian. So while his spoken language wasn't as up to par with English and German for obvious reasons, he was one of those great thinkers in Mongolia.
So he could write in these
write
and languages?
Read and translate, and he was just brilliant. And
that's atypical in any country, I would say.
Yeah, and he loved his vodka. And my grandmother was an opera singer. And opera was kind of young in the country in the 1950s, 60s. So she was the it thing at the time. She's beautiful when she was young. And my aunt, Batsitsig Natsikdorjing, is one of the most famous actresses in Mongolia. Won the most prestigious national award for her work in lots of Mongolian films from the 1970s on. And I've had a minister in the family, my uncle, and, you know, just really well-connected family at the time in early 90s and late 80s.
Do I understand you're writing a book?
Yeah.
Speaking of family of writers, you're carrying on the tradition?
I'd like to, but this book is not really a great work of art. It's really a challenge to myself that I completed. Last year, I wrote a book called Write a How-To Book in 7 Days. And I wrote the draft in 7 days while taking care of my newborn. And to me, it was part being stir crazy at home and part wanting to see what it takes to write a book, and knowing that me undertaking a project that would take years seems impossible. But if I say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and I have to do it within a short period of time, and putting that intense amount of focus on that effort, seeing what I can do, you know. And so I dictated 120 single-spaced pages of a book in 3 days while researching through 12 books and many websites information. And then I edited on the fourth day and edited it again the fifth day and edited again the sixth day. And on the seventh day, I made the book cover design and the sales copy on the back and so forth. And so, yeah, it was...
Were you trying to get it in 7 days? Was it...
Yeah, and...
The week.
I feel like I did it in 7 days, but obviously it needed more polishing later. So within 4 months, I published it.
What's your husband's stories about that week in his life?
Oh, he covered a lot of baby duty.
Hey, yeah, I bet.
I was Were up through nights and stuff. Uh-huh. And yeah.
I would imagine you'd be.
But it was only 7 days.
That was Michelle Chalum. These days, Michelle is busy raising her family of teenagers and working full-time as a budget officer for the city of Aspen. And during those rare quiet moments, she still writes. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. If you'd like to hear other stories, you can access our archive at immigrantstories.net, that's all one word, or kdnk.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.